Polyhedron is a production of Simulacra Studios. You can find us on Twitter at SimulacraRPGs or at PolyhedronCast. If the visual medium is your thing, you can follow us at Simulacra TV on both Twitch and YouTube. If you'd like to support the show, you can go to patreon.com/SimulacraStudios and sign up to be a patron.
Hello and welcome to Polyhedron, your multifaceted podcast. I am your host, Matthew, and as always, I have my two co-hosts, my two friends, Scott.
I am still not responsible for entropy, Matthew.
That's true, he is not, even though I like to blame him from time to time. And nope, Ryan.
Are you sure you don't want to keep in the part where we talk about our aging bodies again? Are you sure you don't? I love it.
One of these days, Dead and Maladies.
It's true. It'll be like the last episode.
Maybe
like
we're ever. Living it.
What are you talking about? Must be leaving in RPGs. You're living one. But anyways, hello. Welcome back. Everyone is here again, and we're going to talk about, you know, stuff and things. Scott, how have you been?
I've been okay. Been playing some games, finally. We got to punch some Nazis, or rather... Wow. Avoid getting punched by Nazis. But no, you guys killed some Nazis. I played in a vampire game that will hopefully be on your screens at some point in the future. It's Appalachia After Dark, so I get to roll back the accent a little bit. Living in Georgia, you can, like, I can just switch between the various modes of speaking. It's like I never was raised with a Southern accent, because like I was raised all over the fucking place. But being in Georgia, I can turn it on because it's everywhere.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep.
I don't have a particular accent unless I'm very tired or trying.
Yeah. But yeah, finished playing the Spider-Mans, and video game wise, I'm starting to play Beyond Two Souls.
Which is
a Quantic Dream game, so you know it's a very ham-handed movie.
Yeah, well, welcome to Quantic Dream.
Mm-hmm. Now,
it requires you to do controls for inexplicable things.
Now, do you think that David Cage would say that Elliot Page's character in Beyond Two Souls is a whore? Because he would say that about many of the female characters in his games. As like, from David Cage.
I did just turn down the opportunity to fuck some dude for $10. So he put that in there. And I'm sure I could have done that. But yeah.
What is my life, guys?
What I mean, it's a Quantum Dream game.
Let the guy keep running a studio. I don't know. They've let him run a studio for years. And he just says these absolutely insane things. And just victimizing women is just like... He obviously it's stroke material for him.
But I generally like that style of game. It's fun to have those kind of choices and whatnot. But no, it's still, you know, you can still see Mr. Cage going, oh, ho, women are scum.
Sad. All right, moving right along. Ryan, how are you? Hopefully better than Scott.
Nope. My body is failing me. My pets are sick.
Aww.
So we've been fighting a round of infections, respiratory, ear infections, and general elder buddy care. So that's been
elder statesman care.
He is a little elder statesman. He's he sits proudly while I clean his tummy and feed him. But yeah, other than that, we did punch Nazis, and that was absolutely wonderful. Just so good. It's so cathartic.
Yeah, I mean, they're Nazis. It's what they're there for.
Oh, quick question, Scott. Was one of the characters, the one who got stabbed real bad last game, based on a Golden Compass character or a character from the Golden Compass? Because I just finished watching the second season, and... Mm-hmm. You know,
no, she is just a character from Adventure.
Oh, really? She is? Okay, because the way she came across, it seemed like there was like some inspiration of like
very
science lady.
There may have been. I didn't bring that into her, although I do love those books and that show.
So,
But if, I mean, she might have, like, I don't know. I don't know what the original creators of Adventures inspirations were for that character. It's the Mechanatrix, for those who care. But I wouldn't doubt if there's a little bit of a, that character. What's her fucking name?
Coulter?
Yeah, Mrs. Coulter. Mrs. Coulter. There might be a little bit of Mrs. Coulter in there.
We were watching it yesterday, and I was just like, you know who she reminds me of? The Matrix.
A little bit, little bit.
Well, is it like a very dominant female Nazi trope?
Not really. She's actually, like, I find her an interesting character, because they like, this is not a character who is evil in her own right. She's just, she likes doing weird science shit, and, like, she's, like, has no personal qualms about what is done with it or how it goes along the lines. And she, like, take money from anyone, but they go make claims to say that her character, like, the why she does what she does and why she's willing to work with basically anyone is she is profoundly lonely.
Okay, got, ooh, but
like she has a lot of trouble making connections with people, and, like, the client relationship is her easiest one to establish.
Right.
So it's like, yeah, I'll make these fantastic machines that you'll turn into Nazi death robots. But just, you know, that means that there's a reason for me to be around people and talk to them and work with them.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting. That's an interesting perspective.
And we did not give a single steaming hot shit about her motivations. Because some bad stuff had already happened.
Right.
She's very much culpable
she's doing.
You work with the Nazis, you take what you get. It's just...
Yeah, so that was just a thought I had yesterday. I was like, I have to ask God.
But it very much was a Dr. Primoris will remember that moment.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
in the Telltale game.
Oh, I already know. Like, I know how Melvin dies, and it's in one of Divis Maul's four sweet arms.
Like. We'll have to see, because I have some plans regarding that in the future.
Oh yeah, far future. Mm. But yeah, other than that, I'm getting my old, like, the oldest D&D group that I have together again. Ooh, for like, nice. For 15 years of not having played with each other, and I'm going to run Keys from the Golden Vault with them.
No,
very as a Sunday game. Try to get everyone I can. It was very nice. We had our session zero last night, and it was just fun to have everyone back together again, because I was like, you know, I don't see these cats enough, and, like, you know, and these are the friends where you just sit back down with them, it doesn't matter, right?
Yeah, it's like, right. Riding a bike.
Yeah it's just like, okay, well, it was time, and all of them still love D&D, so, like, what the fuck are you even doing?
It's always good to reconnect and connect in new ways too. And that's what we like RPGs.
I haven't run a game for these guys in a really long time. So at the very least, I want to be like, I am a better. I want them to see that I'm a better storyteller than I used to be. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That I've gotten better at this kind of.
Absolutely, man. Keep us updated. I'm interested. I'm very interested.
I'll see how they're going. I'm gonna try to rope it or sort of dovetail it into the story that didn't get completed with my last game, because. For various reasons, but yeah, we'll see how that goes.
Yeah,
I'm starting to think about running Mask of Mythos. I'm putting that together in my brain about what that's going to look like.
Mm-hmm.
I am interested in it, and Sion's just like a terrible man. I can fix him.
I can fix him.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, that's it. That's all I had gaming wise that I can think of right now.
Okay. Cool. Anything entertainment-wise? Oh, anything interesting?
I saw John Wick 4, but you guys haven't, so...
Yeah.
Oh, how was it?
Fine.
It's a John Wick film.
It's not the best one.
Oh. Yeah, three was
the best. Guys, 3 was the best.
Actually, I don't 3. 3, currently, the 3 I've seen, 3 is my least favorite.
Yeah, and 3 will be the best one, I think, in terms of, like, the people. You'll understand... We'll have an episode where we discuss why I feel this way.
Fair enough.
When you guys see it as people who like movies, you'll be like, there were some confusing pacing and beat decisions where it's just like, I don't understand.
Oh, from a technical point of view. Got it. Got
I haven't seen John Wick. I haven't seen the D&D movie, which,
Gotta see it, though.
Gotta see it, though,
I was going to ask you guys, but I knew you guys were busy, so I was like,
I'm going to try it in the future as soon as possible to see it, because I've heard it is a delight. I've heard it's wonderful.
Yeah.
And, you know, but other than that, entertainment-wise, I guess it's obviously I'm catching up on The Golden Compass. The end of season two was gutting.
Yeah, wasn't it, though?
Oh, man. Mm. I don't like Lin-Manuel Miranda. Like, I don't like him.
You don't like that guy?
I don't like that guy very much. But, man, that scene really roughed me
up. Oh, yeah.
Mostly because of his demon. Because I loved Hester. Hester was heart-meltingly sweet.
Like, yeah, just a sweet little rabbit, you know?
Little hair lady. And I was like, sweet hair lady.
Yeah, I mean, get ready for season three, because that's war on God.
If here's the thing, Scott, if you had not said season three was the war on God like a while back, I have never read these books. So I was just waiting and watching. It's like, how do we get to war on God? And then by the end, and I'll tell you what, if I didn't know it ahead of time, I would have felt like the series took a very weird turn. Like,
yeah, I mean, it kind of does.
It does take it goes from like kind of ground level problems to God. Mm-hmm. Like, and I gotta say, I can't disagree with what they're saying. I mean,
no, they're not wrong.
They're right. I mean, they're not wrong. Hard determinism sucks. Also, weirdly enough, Persona 5 is kind of the same. Like, killing determinism God is part of Persona. Like,
welcome to anime? Yeah. Like,
well, using the power of your friendship to kill God is like an anime trope.
It is like the thing.
A JRPG anime, a bunch of teenagers using the power of friendship to kill God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was seriously impressed on how they rounded out Golden Compass. Like, it is real fucking good.
Yeah.
That is on my list. I haven't, like, now that it's over and you give it good recommendations, maybe I'll sit down and start binging it.
Yeah, I need to, there are further novels in that universe. They basically did one. They did one that was basically Lyra as a child, and that got real weird. Like, there was some shit going on that, like, wasn't happening in the rest of the series, but kind of makes sense. And then the one that they had released is like her after the series. So we'll see. I think they made hints that they might do more in that world, either based on the books or just other shit.
It is cool. Like, it's a cool world, and they've got weird, and demons are cool, and like their weird steampunkiness is fine and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, their weird confusion about what words mean. You know?
Yeah. Well, you know.
When you meet people from the other world, and it's just like, what the fuck? Anyway, Matt, how's your gaming and stuff been?
Oh, thank you for asking. I appreciate that. Yeah, my gaming's been okay. A little on the low end because of work and going on vacation. By the way, Savannah is a delight, and you should go with your friends down to Savannah if you've never been in Georgia. We had a fine time. There's a lot of things to see, a lot of places to eat. It was good food. It's a great time.
I had the best chicken breast of my life in one of those squares in Savannah.
Yep. We peaked early on Saturday when we got in. We went to Lady and Sons, which is the Paula Deen restaurant. The best food the entire weekend. All the food was really good. So that tells you the bar for that food was astronomical. Like, it was very. No, I didn't see anything down there.
That's fucking 13 years ago. Of course, maybe it's probably not there.
Yep, everything outside you doesn't stay static, sadly.
Oh.
So I haven't really done D&D, haven't done a lot of my gaming. My other entertainment and sort of stuff, I've been playing, I beat Diablo 2 again, because I felt like playing that. Then I tried to start playing Diablo 3, and was like, nah, I'm good.
They don't need it. They don't need your love. Don't.
No. Well, I already had Diablo 3 for a while. I've had it.
Yeah. I own Diablo 3 also. I bought Diablo 3 before I understood the depths of Blizzard's depravity. Yeah. Like, once I learned of the true depths of Blizzard Activision's monstrousness, I was like, we're not doing this anymore.
And then in other news, I went to a swap meet and for my minis and stuff, and sold like basically $300 worth. Nice. Stuff that I was not in my, that was, I didn't need or want anymore. So I have fuel for the fire for the next round of things I'm going to buy. Man, Scott, you said something earlier and it made me think. And then now I forgot it because I didn't interrupt. Oh, well, my fault. My bad.
Things happen.
Yep. So we're going to go hop on into the news. There's actually a couple cool things coming up. And, well, most of them are D&D related because, well, what isn't?
It's the Iron Giant. It's the Juggernaut. It is
the
bullshit.
You want to start with not D&D things?
Yes, please.
Yeah, not D&D things.
Okay, well, there's a new edition of 40K coming out.
Yep.
10th edition.
Yep.
People are upset about it.
Of course they are.
Somebody has opinions on the internet about a new thing.
No, but I think I use this opportunity to pick up they're doing as kind of a thing linked up deal. They've got a Humble Bundle that has like 47 tabletop RPG books for $18. And I was just like, yoink, I'll take that. And there's also a new Shadowrun coming out, I think. So all the 5th edition Shadowrun books are on Humble Bundle for like $20.
Nice.
So I got those, yoink. So in news,
but they were already on their 6th edition.
I think all the 5th edition. It was the 5th edition ones or something.
I thought they were on. Okay, well, never mind.
They probably did. Well, you know, Humble just does shit sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes they get really sneaky deals. Like, they are like, yeah, here's a brand new book for next half off.
I feel like getting the entirety of an edition of two separate things is actually like for $40 is actually like pretty fucking good as far as.
Would you get all the Fantasy Flights?
I haven't looked at all 47 of them.
Yes, it's probably the. It's
I saw
probably
Dark
the
Heresy.
Fantasy.
I saw Black Crusade. I saw.
Yep.
So, yep. Yeah.
Also, because the 10th edition, you have Digital Edition 40K, but then also Cubicle 7's coming out with Maledictum, which is basically their new heresy. It's their new D100 system they're coming out with. Essentially, they're going back from sort of an action, Wrath and Glory is sort of an action movie style. This is going back to the horror investigation style where you work for a big important thing like an inquisitor or something else, and then you're just lowly grunts who can easily be replaced, and you're being thrown in the meat grinder of the dark future, and you've got to make your way.
That is fun for some people, I imagine.
It is. Actually, I like it a lot. It's just for, you just got to use all of those levers. Yeah, use every single one of them. If you want to live.
The Grognardian in you loves
yes,
it.
Yeah. Also, it's fun because if you really dig into 40K, it's awful, and so you can sort of move into those weird shadows and just tell an interesting story, because everything sucks in 40K. Everything. And now we're going to hop back to the D&D stuff, because that's what I got on my plate. So recently we had D&D Direct, which was kind of like an hour-long presentation of here's our roadmap for the future, everyone. And we got some very tasty reveals.
I read the like the one that's posted on Emworld, like the conversation that was at like the live thing where like creators were asking questions, and that got spicy.
Yeah.
Like, now, I will say some people were like asking for things that I don't exactly know how Wizard would be able to like accommodate them for. It's like, what are you going to do about the fact that we're getting death threats for being here? It's like, I don't, well, what can you do? Like, what can wizards do about it? Like, it's the police can't even help you with that. Like,
yeah, it's
hire privates. I don't know. There's private security around probably, but it sounds like they've got the point though. Oh, interestingly enough, the Spelljammer debacle was apparently enough for them to get an in-house pre-review team that was basically saying Spelljammer couldn't happen now. Like, as of like right now, something that like Spelljammer and all the problems, basically all the weird sensitivity problems that they've been having, they put a team in place to be like, get that shit out of here before, you know, before
it
gets out the door, maybe.
They need it.
Yeah, that's like something they should have done like fucking 5 years ago.
Yeah, it's crazy that it took them that long, right?
Well,
glad they did it. Like, I'm glad they did.
Well, in our Lord 2023, they finally have sensitivity readers. Okay, good. You're good literally the 800-pound gorilla in the room, guys. Everyone needs to follow your lead, so you need to set a good example.
Yeah.
But for the other stuff, the less, like, you know, awful stuff that was at D&D Rec, well, one thing is basically they got a roadmap in Q3. We're going to get two interesting stories and sort of supplements. One is called Bigby Presents Glory of the Giants, which, guess what? It's going to be about giants, giants? Which is cool because giants have their own weird culture, and I'm interested to see if them exploring that.
I would be very interested if they get into, if they go into any of the historical stuff of them, because giants were like actually a major part of D&D lore, like in terms of like the olden days, because you know, it could just be giants and dragons punching each other for 10,000 years, basically.
Right. you go ahead.
No.
And also in Q3, we're going to get another big thing called Fellow Dandler and Below the Shattered Obelisk. And supposedly this is going to start tying in several years of stories that have had an obelisk in them, and it's going to go back to the mines of Fendelver and sort of start bringing sort of a culmination to that.
What you got here is a mystic obelisk that pervades throughout mythology and time and space. It's got it's got various manifestations all through various dungeons and places of power.
There's always a girl.
Also dragons. Dragons are always involved. I'm not exactly sure why.
So we got a real BioShock situation going.
We're gonna have to spray around the foundation and probably
I got calling a contractor, buddy. He's really good. He'll give you a good
deal. We're going to need to fumigate the shit out of this obelisk, I tell you what.
Because you know what happens if you leave your obelisk alone for too long? You know what you get? Liches.
You won't want any liches. I'm just saying.
Wait a minute. I have to look at the final map of Rime of the Frostmaiden to see if there's an obelisk in Ithrin.
There probably is.
Once them liches get into the foundation, then that's a done deal.
We gotta bring everything up, and that's gonna cost you some time and money.
And I can't get those parts today.
Yeah, I can't.
Everyone out here in audience land, welcome to one of our favorite little inside jokes, which is the guy, the exterminator guy who just handles all the metaphysical problems in all of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And you got infestation of witches.
Witches, come on now.
you got yourself the worm. You just got to spray it around the foundation.
Yeah.
So Q4, this is the most exciting part for me. This is literally like the reason I will keep paying attention is we're getting Planescape.
Yeah,
we're getting Planescape. They gave us new art, but it's very evocative of the old art.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a little softer. It's a little more understandable.
Ooh, boy, that lady of pain.
Yeah. Well, they toned her down a little bit. Like, she's very interesting in the artwork. But people are very, very excited for that. And I am, too, because Planescape is a weird-ass setting, but it is a lot of fun. It is truly the melting pot setting. So if you're like, yeah, I want to play this, and I want to play that, and I want to play this, and, like, you want all the books to be viable, like, sure, go ahead. We play in a Planescape now, because anything and everything can be found in Sigil.
In Obelisk Land, I just looked, and it's like, of course, there's an obelisk in Rime of the Frostmaiden that if they go through the steps to activate it, it literally hurls the entirety of, it unwrites 2,000 years of Faerun's history, literally resetting the world to before the Nethery city fell. And it's just like, what to do if they do this? It's like, we're not going to lie to you. This is not going to be easy.
Yeah.
We don't really have anything about this. Like, there's nothing written for 2,000 years ago. Here's some general broad strokes of what the world was like 2,000 years ago. But there is an entire thing about the secrets of the obelisk from Tomb of Annihilation and Dungeon of the Mad Mage.
Yep.
I guess they're going to
be in this Fandelver one is going to have another one too. Here's my guesstimation, especially Crawford's involved. This is their culmination storyline for sixth edition. They're doing a thing similar to fourth edition, which is, hey guys, hold on to your butts. We're going to change a lot of things.
Well, I mean, all the obelisks are capable of, they're basically like anti-reality engines. Like they are meant to basically alter the entire world somehow, and there's like three or four of them, probably four of them. So I imagine, like, okay, well, what's gonna happen? Like, what are they gonna do?
And then the last thing in Q4, which is very interesting in 2023, is Deck of Many Things, which is actually going to talk about the history and the origins of the legendary deck of many things. That'll be intriguing. I'll be intrigued to see what that has, what they're going to say about that.
I'm not sold on that as a concept, because it's like, whatever. But like, if I could be sold on it, like if it's cool, or if I'll, of course, I'm going to look at it.
So that's very interesting. Like it's not a one-to-one, but they just had the first episode of the second campaign of Acquisitions Incorporated. And like, of course, there's not a lot that they haven't revealed a lot about what's going on. But we do know is that they're 15 years in the past in an alternate Greyhawk.
Hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah. Like
does that think exist in Greyhawk?
It does now.
It does now. It's been in Forgotten Realms.
It's been in Forgotten Realms.
Okay.
So they're doing multiversal shit to kind of manage that reset of that continuity.
Which is interesting.
I could have Ak Inc. be some of the bad guys in my game.
Yeah, you absolutely should. If you get the supplement, it tells you how to use them. I mean, Omen Drawn is like the worst CEO ever, so
Yeah, you see it with actual physical, like metaphysical power. Yeah. Like that's the worst.
Yikes. The non-disparagement clause, dude.
Oh,
way too enforceable.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want that.
Yep. So yeah, they had D&D next big news is, well, we all knew this was coming when they got bought D&D Beyond, which is they're doing a VTT, virtual tabletop.
Of course they were. I mean, they said as much.
Yeah, they knew. We knew. Yes, they said it. We knew it. They're in the. Supposedly, it's an in-house. They're doing in-house beta right now.
Yep.
People, and friends and trusted family can get in on it, and they're
and
working
they have
on it.
Straight up said this shit is releasing in 2 years from now.
Yeah,
so like they're giving themselves a really good runway
yes.
to work with. They have no real answers about anything they're intending to do. Their intent. The person who was doing the interview made their intention clear about what they intend to. If they go through with all the things they say they intend to do, it will be a fine product.
Yeah. All they have right now is intentions, not anything less tangible.
According to them, your content is your content. If you create it in their system, it's still your content. You have the rights to it. Hmm. According to them today.
Yeah, right now.
According to them today, and this very, very hostile, it sounded like really intense, like, Q&A with a bunch of creators.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was literally a creator con. It was creator summit.
Yeah. I know I follow a couple of people who went to it, but I haven't paid attention to it because I don't really care.
And yeah, they've got plans for like prices. Like if you buy the book, like the one thing that actually matters to me, if you buy the book, it actually like might actually make buying the digital shit cheaper, which
yeah.
What a great incentive to buy the physical copy.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I guess they may hate the physical copies. I don't know. I don't know how Wizards views their physical media anymore, whether they actually like releasing books or it's even profitable for them to do so. I have no idea. It probably isn't profitable for them to release books, but they have to.
I mean, there is a measure of profit, but obviously it's not, the margin's pretty.
There's
pretty
something
small.
About a physical fucking book that.
Makes it real.
You just need it sometimes.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's all the news I got. Those are some pretty notable things from D&D land. We know that the Player's Guide to Adventure, or not Adventure, Training to Continuum, the core book for Talents, is on a, not Kickstarter, it's on
Backer Kit.
Backer Kit. It's on Backer Kit right now.
Backer Kit, yes.
Backer Kit.
Basically, the people who used to deliver all their shit anyway, I guess, decided to take, the, like, make the step of becoming the platform also for the funding.
Yeah, I mean, they've done a project with them before, and, you know, I think they're just going to go between Kickstarter and Backer Kit unless one of them becomes superior to the other.
Yep.
But yeah, no, I've backed it. It looks interesting. I can't wait to get the new rules, especially the new gifts and such, because apparently they have, like interdimensional travel gifts and microverse gifts, so a lot of the weirder end of Marvel Comics stuff is coming out.
Yeah, Talents are the ones who get to kind of do that.
Yeah.
Which is fine. They need a zone, a lane that can be theirs.
Mm-hmm.
Well, narrative convenience is their power.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
All right. Well, that's it for the news. Anything else, guys? We're moving on to the main topic.
Ryan mentioned something about hot goss about Wormwood, and I'm curious.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a whole thing. I'll let him get into that.
Oh, man. It's just bad, man. It's just people like telling on themselves in real time. Like, you know, it's like apparently the Colts, for anyone who doesn't know, Wormwood, it makes really, really fancy tabletop accoutrement, including actual tables. Now, apparently the guy who runs this place sucks. Like, it just sounds like he sucks. Allegedly he sucks. How about that? For our own protection, allegedly all of these things happen. Allegedly they don't care about the safety of their employees. Allegedly he tries to show people his penis when they don't want to see his penis at all. And then allegedly he talked about their response on, like, they have like a pod, like they have like a live video Twitch chat or
something like that,
and they're sitting there on the Twitch chat talking about the response they're going to post to this, like, this whole situation. I'm like,
what,
why would you do that? Like, first of all, that makes none of, like, I don't, okay, it, that's really it though. Like, the guy who runs it apparently sucks, and I guess don't buy their stuff until you can confirm it. He does not.
Yep. It always sucks when you've, like, you have your community, your gaming community. You like to think, well, everyone's like a real good person, like a good person. They're decent. They try to do well by the community, and you find out they suck, and it always hurts.
You know, we're making great strides, I think, in terms of, like, trying to be inclusive, trying to be accepting in, like, in our hobby, in, like, the grand scheme of things. Like, you know, I feel like tabletop gaming is trying to do its best. I feel like it's trying to make big strides. But, man, there are still some fucking dicks out here.
Yep. I mean, there will always be an asshole. Assholes will always exist, but
there's always people who want to play tabletop role-playing games to pretend to hurt and rape people, which that's really what, you know, I mean, yeah, I know, it fucking sucks.
Yeah, yep. I mean, if that's the type of character that you want to play, then, you know, I'm going to be paying attention to you.
Right. And,
like, you're just like, okay, that's in you? Cool, I'm keeping an eye on you.
Yeah, also, the age slider matters a lot on that one.
Because, yeah, like, that's true.
There's, like, it's never acceptable, but if you were to, like, put a numeric value to the how unacceptable, you know, being a weird, shitty person at the table is, the older you get, like, the more unacceptable that shit gets.
Yeah, because you should have it out of your system and know better. Like, yeah, if you're a shitty teenager, and I'm not, like, saying, like, we're all at some level shitty teenagers. You know, but yeah, like, there's some of that can be overlooked as long as, you know, you grow out of it. But yeah, no, if you're our age and you're, like, you know, molester McStab a kid, then it's
hilarious.
You know, that's called I'm not playing with you anymore.
Hey, you don't know where I live, right? Good. That'll never be the case.
It'll never not be the case.
Yeah, doing the session zero with all my friends who are like, we're all in our 30s stuff and have just been playing so long. That was smooth as butter, man. It's just like, hey, is there some shit y'all don't want to have to deal with? And everyone was just like, PvP. All right, good.
Mwah.
I was like, hey, how about, we came up with a good rule for just that we've kind of been doing in my games all along, but, like, never really put words to, is friendly fire permission. You have to give permission to be friendly fired upon by your team.
So right.
Get upset because you lack strategic thought processes.
So it's the fireball contingency.
Yeah, yes. The fireball. You are allowed to say, you cannot cast a fireball on us right now. We will die.
Like, right. You can veto bad. A certain action because you're like,
veto other people's actions if it's that stupid or bad.
Sometimes it's the right thing to do tactically, I will say.
Oh, no, tactical fireball. Matt can tell you this. In Dungeon of the Mad Mage, I was always just like, hit me, baby.
You're because you're a fucking monk. Like, you are a high-level monk. You're fine.
But I, even in, and I mean, you've seen me accept a friendly fire.
Yeah, absolutely. If I'm playing my fighter character in my D&D game, Mockland, I'm like, sometimes I'm like, guys, cool, just do it. I'll be okay. I'll hurt, but I will be okay.
Oh, and we're also using a house rule that Brandon Lee Mulligan was talking about, where death rolls are secret.
Yeah, that's
some cool shit right there.
My buddy Jeremy suggested that shit to me, and I'm just like, yes.
Yeah, now, you should.
That's the kind of tension ratcheting I like. Like,
yes,
where it's like, okay, let's de-gamey it a little bit, and it'll add just a little spice.
Yeah, if your friend's down, you don't know.
You just don't know until you get to them.
It's good for the tension of the table, because you're sort of taking the out of game information that everyone sort of has to be aware of or will be aware of, and just being like, no, you don't know.
Try to get there in 3 rounds,
yeah, or less.
Try to, it doesn't like, just try to get there in 3 rounds, and if it's not, maybe you're sweating. Maybe you're sweating.
There was a game a long time ago. This was well before 3 had just come out. I was playing the game briefly, and the guy with Gene was like, I roll all your dice rolls.
Oh,
Yeah, that's a little too much.
It's a lot on the GM. It's an astronomical amount. I do not recommend it for anyone new to the game. But it was just like, but it was really cool, because you just described what you did, and the GM through the roles started helping you interpret what was going on, so that because you didn't have that ambiguity, you don't know how well your character is going to do. You have no cognitive understanding. You're just going to act the best way you think you should act.
While there is like an interesting old school, like weird, like that feels really old school.
A little bit, yes.
Because what, interestingly enough, when the community episodes of Dungeons and Dragons, that's how Abed ran the game. And when I saw that, I was like flabbergasted. I was like, like, he does all the rolling for you? That's weird. And then I found out, that's the way the people used to do it. I'm like,
it's Abed.
That's Abed. Yeah. Obviously. But yeah.
It was an interesting idea. I've wanted to do something else, because I learned this from another LARP through Joey, was in some Call of Cthulhu LARP, they will pre-roll everyone before they go to the game, like rolls 100 rolls, and they write it on a piece of paper. Everyone's rolls are different, though. Everyone's got their own piece of paper. So literally, when you go bang, they compare, they go this to, you look at you, and you look at your next roll on the list, and you say miss, hit, critical, dead. Like, that's how it goes. And I was like, you could apply that to a tabletop, like a D20, and be like, you have like 100 D20 rolls, but you don't know where in the sequence those are going to come up. So you're just comparing them and keep going back and forth.
Yeah, and that kind of system, like, especially in a LARP situation, is like, all right, I know my next thing is going to suck. Like, I know my next thing is going to be good, so I'm gonna pick and choose where I'm good and where I suck.
Which is it's its own form of like tactics
in economy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Action economy.
Yeah. Cuz the suck's going to come. Like, the suck is preordained.
Well, as we learn. It's the churn.
It's the churn. Yeah.
Oh, we want to talk about a role-playing game with hard determinism? You have that, where you have rolls, and then when you start being able to break hard determinism, you can start rolling.
You should start actually
rolling.
Oh, man, that would be weird.
Like, oh, that's so cool. I've got to thought.
No, the way we were running the game was completely part of the story, guys. Now you have your own dice.
Hey, but
now you killed God.
Hey, guys, you killed God. Congratulations. You can do whatever you want.
Or you've killed the God of Fate, basically.
Yes. Like,
and now chaos reigns.
Whoa, a giant D20, demonic D20 just comes rolling down out of the sky.
Oh, man, I had an idea for a mage game that was basically, it was a technocracy game, but they had to on the sly get some tradition mages to deal with something, because it was too outside of like their own purviews, and their magics, their science wasn't cutting it.
It couldn't adapt fast enough to whatever it was dealing with.
And what it was there's this eldritch, impossible to comprehend entity coming through the deep umbra, and it's just tearing through every level of defense that the technocracy has against that sort of shit. And so they're like putting together a team and like calling upon their enemies to help. And what it was a giant icosahedron coming into the world of darkness. And as it encroaches, like, you have to start rolling different dice.
I have seen that. I've had that played on me a couple times before, where if someone put a d20 in my hand when I was not expecting to roll a d20, I was like, I don't like it.
I don't like it.
These are much worse odds. So much worse.
Yeah, there's also the classic, the old school Star Wars, where they would like, the GM would be like, you want some dark side dice?
Yeah.
Right here.
Oh, baby. Wow.
Yeah. All right. So you want to actually go, now we diverted a little bit. You want to go on to the main topic?
Yeah, I mean, it's not that much of a topic. It's just an idea that's been kicking around in my head for a little bit.
Sure. We'll let's spin it up.
So I am of the opinion that role players in general, tabletop and LARP, kind of more, this is more applicable to LARP than it is to tabletop, but you can learn some lessons. There are lessons to be learned by paying attention to professional wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, strip it all away, and like, pro wrestling is soap opera.
Yes.
It is absolutely soap opera. There are storylines, characters rise and fall, and there is some decent fucking storytelling done in a wrestling story arc.
Yes.
And, you know, especially when you're living with like larger than life characters, big rivalries. And, yeah, I just generally think there's a lot of really good lessons to be learned. You know, there's, so these wrestlers are playing characters loosely based on themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they're themselves, but amped up.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes they're just straight up playing a character as well.
Mm.
Like someone who's just not them at all. But yeah, I mean, a lot of them do meld their personalities. And, you know, there's definitely an arc to things, you know, depending on, and it's an ensemble piece. Like, everyone in the company has their own storyline going on.
Mm-hmm.
And those storylines mix and intermingle. They clash. They change as a result of things. And, you know, it's a very easy thing to do to sort of map this onto role playing, particularly if you're playing something with like larger than life characters. Or, you know, heroes that have conflicting motivations, kind of thing.
Oh, but yeah, like your buffer LARP, like a buffer LARP.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, buffer LARP is a really good, there's a really good one-to-one. I mean, if you think about, like, the pacing of a wrestling storyline,
mm-hmm.
you know, it starts off, there's an inciting incident, and, you know, the things, encounters build from time to time. You have, you know, some minor combat, like, you know, minor matches against one another, or you interfere in someone else's match. You know, you have these battling promos, which is like, you know, every now and then you have a conversation with your opponent.
Yeah.
And then it all sort of builds up to a massive confrontation that settles everything.
Until the next time,
you know, we shake up this thing and do it all again.
Yeah.
Which that, I mean, I, you know, we've all been buffer LARPs. We've all known what it's like to be involved in that storyline.
Yep. 100%. That's why when you brought this up, like, oh, I'm not super into it because for me, mm-hmm. dear audience, I get it, because what Scott is basically saying is professional wrestling is just buffer LARPing taking to where everyone makes money.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there is some,
but yeah.
There's some real differences in that, you know, these people are really getting hurt.
Yes, like, they very much are.
Holy shit. Like, if you want to see a match that, like, you know, the whole thing of, oh, wrestling is fake. Yeah, the outcomes are basically predetermined. Every now and then something happens that wasn't supposed to happen in yep. terms of, like, how it all ends out. But you watch The Undertaker versus Mick Foley Hell in the Cell match.
Yep.
And tell me that, like, isn't real.
Yeah, Mick Foley was a crazy man. Is a crazy man, and he went to the hospital because he got
choked multiple times. Like, yep. Like that shot. Like, there's a shot of him where you see that he has a tooth coming out of his nose, like one of his own teeth coming yep. out of his nose, and like, holy fucking shit!
Yeah, they get wrecked. Wrestlers get wrecked, and yeah. I mean, it's.
But that's also, like, you know, maybe not to that physical extreme, but that level of commitment
mm-hmm.
to the character of, like, just going all in on a character and, you know, living them and pushing them to their limits, driving, like it said in Jackalope, driving a character like it's a car you stole.
Mm-hmm.
Like
yes.
The professional wrestlers, the really good ones, absolutely do that. And you can take some inspiration from that level of commitment to putting on a show.
Yes, to really hamming, aka hamming up or chewing the scenery. Because mm-hmm. at a LARP, when you're portraying the character, we're all here for an exciting time, and you want to amp it up a little bit because you want your characters to be a little more rememberable, noticeable. You want everyone to pay attention. Yeah, we've known several people in our LARPing community that can put on those larger than life affectations, and you can kind of see the light sort of come on when they start doing it. Yeah, so, and also, I would say also what we can take for is the back-end organization.
Yes.
Back-end, like, these wrestlers, probably less so in the very high end of professional wrestling, but even in the medium to lower grades, they have to collaborate a lot with each other. Mm-hmm. They have to go, hey, this is how I think this, okay, who's going to kind of probably win, all right? We got to talk about how that's going to happen. And they have a lot of like terminology and just ideas. And also they're getting consent from one another. They're saying, hey, I want to do X. Is this cool? I'm going to do it like this. You understand? And they build trust with one another through doing these moments. Yeah. Because unlike a professional boxer or in a hardcore competition, they're not just trying to win. That's not their goal.
They're trying to put on the best show, the best performance that they possibly can. And that means taking a shit kicking every now and then.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, because the audience loves someone who loves the underdog, loves people who struggle and overcome.
It's inspiring. Tell you what, if you think wrestling is bullshit, stand on your bed, jump up, and turn yourself straight downwards and land head first on your bed. And you tell me how it feels.
Yeah.
Do that on something much harder.
Yep.
They have to make it look great.
And they do. Like, I mean, you know, this is outside of role playing a bit, but like the level of training and athleticism that goes into this shit, because they make it look real or it not being real. Like they have to fling their bodies around and like collide with one another in a way that minimizes actual physical damage to one another.
So there's a reason why you typically don't see the heavyweights with the lightweights, the featherweights. Mm-hmm. There's just a huge mass difference. And one of my best friends when I was growing up was Matt Schiavone, Tony Schiavone's son. He took me to some wrestling matches. Wrestlers are fucking huge. Mm-hmm. Like the actual heavyweight guys are what I would almost categorize them as giants. They are big, beefy people. And they have to be, though. Because they're going up against other big, beefy people.
It helps having a real thick neck when you keep falling on it.
Yes, so that's why the lightweights, that's why it's a big deal when the lightweights or the featherweights start going in the ring with the big guys. Because if they screw something up, that little guy is going to get real hurt. Just because there's it's a physics thing when they're impacting each other. And so that also rounds it back to LARPing and buffer LARPing especially is keeping yourself aware of the differences in physicality between some people, because obviously that's sportsmanship too, of like being respectful for one another's abilities and doing a good job of fighting well, but fighting safely.
And I mean, going all the way back, and if you know, LARP rules are good or bad based on whether like it accessibility is what factors into whether your LARP rules are good or bad, in my opinion. So So you want your fighter rules to where, like, yes, there is some buy-in, right? Like, you got it. Okay, you're going to have to be physical. You're going to have to do a little bit of jumping around and doing stuff. But if you're good enough and you really put the points in, even if you're not, like, super physically capable, when you swing that fucking sword into something and you actually burn resources, something big happens.
Yeah, something happens.
Something big happens.
Yeah, and also part of the collaboration aspect of it, and the backroom stuff is also like sometimes there's the what they call it's not the foil, it's the guy who keeps getting his shit kicked in all the time.
The jobber.
Yeah, the jobber gets to win occasionally.
Yeah, exactly. Or at the very least gets a good hit in. Because
yeah,
it's
right.
Like it, well, like there's all sorts of like little tricks and whatnot of like, you know, when you see someone like vamping to the crowd, that's not just him like, you know, building his own ego. He's giving his partner time to rest.
Yes.
Or like, you know, even like the guy's hanging on the ropes and you're like pounding into him, like giving a bunch of punches. Those punches aren't landing. They're not hitting. That's also giving your top partner, the guy on the rope, getting hit.
Yeah, because he's laying on the rope. He's physically letting the rope hold him up for a minute.
Just like, just like,
and if you pay real close attention, because nothing. As television and high television has become more high definition, if you pay attention in the camera work, the cameramen are good, but they're not great. Mm-hmm. If you're paying attention, you look at it, you can see them like, oh, that wouldn't actually hurt you.
Yeah, I know,
like,
of course.
You can see the physicality of where they're twisting or altering the body just enough to where they're hitting like the broad side of your back or the bigger parts of your body so that you don't get really hurt.
So how important is kayfabe in tabletop role-playing games?
I think kayfabe is probably the most important thing.
So people use kayfabe, and I've heard a couple of different editions.
I looked it up.
Kayfabe.
Mm-hmm.
It is literal. It is probably, like, it is carny slang, basically. Mm-hmm. But it is it comes off of Pig Latin for fake.
Mm-hmm. Okay, got it.
Ake fay. Yeah. So, and eventually, apparently, it comes out of carny stuff where, and kayfabe was just don't let the rubes pretend it's real, even if no matter what, you know,
it's about buying in. It is about
everyone buys in, you know,
everyone buys in. I mean, it used to be a lot more like carny mafia styles keeping the secret, but the secret's out by now. And now kayfabe is like it's more. Everyone gets on the kayfabe, like
sell it, yeah. Sell it. To me, kayfabe is you've got to sell it, but the only way you really sell it is try to make it as genuine as possible.
It also means, in the terms of professional wrestlers, until they break out of their until they're out of their contracts and stuff, maintaining character in interpersonal stuff, but like if you're on, you're on. Like if there's a camera on you, you're on.
And, right, you keep the persona up.
Yeah, and you know, so yeah, buying in is the most important thing at the kayfabe is so important for tabletop.
It absolutely is, because you know it's about maintaining an immersion, maintaining an atmosphere. It's about everyone keeping and staying on the same page, so that when you hit that magic gust of wind that like brings everyone in on the story, you stay there. Like you run that train as long as it'll go.
Yes, yes. And also, and also, let's take a little example of, like, because of kayfabe and persona, look at their personas. Look at the larger and live aspects. Look at what they're trying to ham up. Like, those bigger, like, we talked about Nick Foley.
Mm-hmm.
He hamped up his craziness, like, that was his character. That cartoonish level of wackiness that he brought, coupled with his physicality, made it both exceedingly intriguing to watch and utterly terrifying to watch at the same time, because you didn't know what he was going to do.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm going to talk a little bit about wrestling terminology for a second, just to make a point here.
Sure.
So two of the biggest terms in wrestling is you got the heel and you got the babyface.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, the good guy and the bad, and two of the biggest wrestlers of all fucking time in like from coming out of what's known as the Attitude Era, which is like mid to late 90s, early 2000s. It was like the era of the craziest fucking shit you could think of.
It was because I was watching wrestling at the time. It was sort of like the edgy. It was supposed to be the edgy era. It's like the era of fuck the man, we run everything, we do what we want, we do not care era at all.
Yeah. I mean, this is where you had like shit like The Undertaker in his prime, Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yep.
Just, yeah, all this sort of like very, very edgy, kind of punky stuff. But there was a time when you had the two biggest baby faces in the WWF, or the WWE as it is now. You had The Rock and you had Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yep.
These were two. Neither of them were bad guys, and yet they had a rivalry.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like this, who was the best, like who was like the truest champion. And they had this that you can watch like videos about this, the story of their rivalry. And it's never about, it's like so atypical from old style, because it's always heel versus babyface. This is two babyfaces, like two champions of the people, good guy kind of personas. And yet they don't work together, but like outside of the ring, they're just these two professionals building this like massive, it's another term, heat.
Yes.
Massive heat of like the anticipation of the final showdown.
Yeah. They were competing, but in one, like it wasn't it's actually more rivalry in the traditional sense of mm-hmm. We are both really good at what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're going to see who's the best at this. We don't hate, it's not interpersonal. It's not like you've done something to me that I find offensive. It is literally us seeing who the best at this is.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. So they were rivals in a traditional sense, and it made for some very interesting, everyone was always intrigued.
And obviously, like, you know, it's not that you're not going to have necessarily a big interpersonal, you know, series of fights with one another, but that's a relationship that can be established in a tabletop game or in a LARP of like two big heavy hitters who, you know, who have like this competition amongst themselves.
Camaraderie. That's the word I was looking
for. Yeah,
they have a camaraderie. You have a camaraderie with one another, which you can easily establish with like your fellow players. And especially if you're just doing the thing you would normally do. And it's like, I did this thing. It's like, no, I did this thing plus. And you just kind of go back and forth from there.
Yeah. And like the concept of, I mean, we're talking about like this concept of like heat and kayfabe and all this stuff. And the key difference between role-playing and professional wrestling is that, you know, there's always this relationship between performer and audience. And something I like to call back from what John Wick used to say, role-playing is the only medium where performer and audience are the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And so these concepts just kind of fold in on itself when you're taking them from one medium to another. And it's about like, you know, heat is your fellow players and your mm-hmm. your fellow performers. You're all just increasing this level of buy-in and immersion. And like I said, the thing that you can take from professional wrestling is the commitment, is the balls out willingness to go to the extreme places where you can go, as long as you're doing so within this established boundaries of your table's agreements.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. Yeah, those, because you're also audience, you're entertaining yourself, but you're also entertaining everyone else too. Mm-hmm. And if you keep that in mind, and everyone sort of keeps that in mind and gives you the thumbs up, it can be really, really good. That's what makes role-playing exciting, to tell those stories, to really go feed off each other's energy, is a sort of a classic term of any performer, any sort of physical performer. It's just like feeding off the motivation and the hype and the energy that everyone's got around you, and using that to motivate you and do things to further entertain or intrigue the story.
And of course, there are role-playing games that are based on wrestling.
Yes, there are.
Like there's like Worldwide Wrestling's is one. The supplement.
Grappling is a huge part of the Street Fighter.
Yeah.
Wolf game.
Yep.
Yep.
And then there's the NWE, the supplement for Sprint, which is a mini game in and of itself, which is just great. We need to run a game of that. It's so cool.
Yeah, and that's it. Ryan, any comments, any closing thoughts on this?
No, I mean, I think we've covered it. I mean, I don't have much of an opinion on wrestling. I don't partake. I know enough about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But no, I think, you know.
I actually, just as a general comment about wrestling, I actually really appreciate at least the era that we're in now for wrestling, because it's a lot of the people who are like, oh, wrestling's fake, that's long since gone, like mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. No one really talks about that. Everyone kind of gets it now.
Yeah.
And because of that, a lot more people are getting into it mm-hmm. because they're like, oh, it's just beefy soap operas. Got it.
Yeah, it's a very silly set of soap operas yeah. and a kind of a funny, twisty story with all kinds of crazy magical characters in it sometimes.
And like really, really excellent displays of athleticism and showmanship.
Yes.
Crazy awesome. Like whether or not like a super move is actually like hurting anybody for mm-hmm. real, It definitely can, and it definitely looks cool.
Yeah.
Also, the ladies are getting into it. Like, some of the female wrestlers this day and age are fucking cool.
Yeah, they are fucking cool. They're great. They bring new tension to the stories, because you have tensions that you didn't normally have, which is very cool. Also,
I don't know whether to pile drive you or kiss you, you son of a...
So cold, drinking two beers and riding on top of a fucking... Willer into the stadium. Shit like that. Yeah, so we talked about kayfabe's great. Go out there, give it your all, obviously safely.
As every anime has ever said, do your best.
Yeah, do your best. So from everyone here at Polyhedron, go where your fun is.
Roll some dice.